Hello and welcome to the 66 to 87 podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. And my goodness, do we have news to talk about after several weeks of kind of just coming around and having different ideas and concepts and stuff. Oh no, baby, we've got news. The Penguins pulling off, some would say, a bit of a surprise trade. Jared McCann moved on to Toronto. We're going to get to that in 1 second. But also teams, the NHL teams on Saturday had to put out their protected lists. That has been out. We're going to get into who the Penguins decided to protect and who they decided not to protect. Lots going on, and we're going to be joined a little bit later by Scott Young, the Director of Player Development for the Penguins. So we've got a lot to get to, but let's start with how this weekend, these last few days started with the trade of Jared McCann to Toronto. They reacquired Philip Hollander, a player that they had drafted in 2018, and they also received a seventh round draft pick in 2023. Start with both of you guys. Taylor, were you surprised by this decision to move Jared McCann as the Penguins were starting to also put together their protected list?
I mean, I was, because I think, you know, the last thing I read about the expansion draft was, you know, should they protect McCann or Tanev with the last spot? And I you know, made a case for McCann. Just, I mean, he led the team in power play goals. He was the second youngest forward on the team, really, just by a few months, by you know, older than Kapanen. He still had room to grow. I thought he still had a spot, a reasonable contract. But I mean, the expansion draft was making teams make these kinds of trades. I still don't know if I really don't agree with it, I guess. I mean, I think part of that depends on what happens in the expansion draft and who they lose, but I'm not crazy about the move.
Dave, the story out of Toronto is that they wanted to acquire Jared McCann. I don't know if they feel he's similar to Alexander Kerfoot. Kerfoot's a player they're concerned that they're going to lose. They have to obviously protect their own amount of forwards. I think they ended up protecting four forwards and four defensemen. And McCann was kind of insurance that they would at least get to keep one of those guys. What do you think the Penguins thought on what's the Penguins' thought process on agreeing to this deal?
Well, I mean, we don't know for certain what their thought process was, because Ron Hextall still hasn't spoken since the weekend. But I don't think it's a reach to suggest that they thought that A, they weren't going to protect McCann, and that B, they thought there was a pretty good chance that they would lose him to the Kraken for nothing other than the expansion fee. This trade means is that they will lose somebody else to the Kraken for nothing but the expansion fee. On some levels, if you were going to have to part with a guy, you know, perhaps he made sense, because when your top six forwards are healthy, he's kind of a spare part. He's a, you know, it's a real nice luxury to have a guy like McCann on your roster that you can play, you know, in various spots and, you know, move him up and down the lineup. But, you know, when you're getting squeezed, you're probably going to have to give up somebody that you would rather keep. And, you know, that's what they did here. And, you know, they got back a guy that I thought showed some real promise when he was part of the organization the first time around. And, you know, there's been no indication that Philip Hollander has regressed since they sent him to Toronto in the Kasperi Kapanen trade. So, you know, they at least will have something to show for McCann.
All right, we'll get a little bit more to McCann Hollander in a second. But Taylor, I want to ask you, one of Dave's points is when the Penguins are healthy among that top six, where would he fit in? obviously one of the elephants in the room right now, as far as that's concerned, is what's going to happen with Evgeny Malkin when he might come back from this knee surgery. You'd think he's going to be on the shelf for a while. Was that part of your thinking when you were wanting to keep McCann? If you thought McCann, beyond his contributions last year, I mean, who's going to kind of play in that role where he can play center, he can play wing, he's got some versatility to him?
Yeah, he when he was here, he looked better as a winger. So that wasn't necessarily, you know, Malkin's injury wasn't really part of my rationale in keeping McCann over him, because I mean, what they do have guys who can play center. Freddie Gaudreau, what Hextall did tell Dave that they're looking to re-sign him. He plays center and he's done more recently, more often than McCann. And I mean, a couple of guys who are, you know, borderline coming up from the minors, maybe they could, you know, like, or like Zahorna, they could push short spots. So, I mean, McCann's versatility really wasn't, you know, the deciding factor of why I would have protected him. But just, I mean, he's young and the potential he has, and, you know, what he did like on the power play, that was the biggest thing, because he didn't spend, you know, most of the season on that top unit. It was really when Malkin was out is when he, you know, had that extended time, and he still led the team in power play goals. So it just seemed like he had a lot more room to grow, and I thought it would have been interesting to see that. But, I mean, he's still my end up going to Seattle. I mean, when I did my mock draft, I picked him from Toronto just based off the players available. It seems like, you know, they might be just using him as kind of a shield for their own guys.
Well, we have Bob Aries' snoring dog, and then we have, of course, the reoccurring appearance by the Columbus garbage trucks that seems to always come by when we're doing this first segment of our podcast. Dave, what is it that you liked when they made this acquisition, when they drafted Hollander a couple of years ago? Because obviously he's on his way back. What is it that you like about his game, or what should fans know about his game from a guy coming back from Sweden?
Oh, the first thing to like about him is he's an actual Penguins draft choice, which, you know, there's only a handful of those in the known world. but he seems like he has the potential to be an effective two-way player. You know, he's not going to be a prodigious point producer, but you know, he looks like he will be a solid contributor at both ends of the ice. I could see him, you know, ultimately settling into a middle six role in the NHL. I think he was widely regarded as one of the Penguins' best prospects at the time that they sent him to Toronto. I mean, obviously that's, you know, not a very large group to be singled out in, but he's a legit player, and I expect him to be in the NHL for a long time.
Taylor, are there any more Penguins prospects in Toronto that they can reacquire, or is this it? Are we done with Kapanen and now Hollander? This is it?
Yeah, I'm off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure.
Okay,
they don't have anyone else.
Taylor, you wrote about him. You know, Dave was working on the news when this trade was made, and you wrote a quick piece on Hollander. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, when he was here, I mean, last time he was in Pittsburgh, it was the last development camp they had, 2019. Scott Young talked about him then, too. He called him, you know, a power forward. And you mentioned it earlier. We talked to Scott Young in the third segment, so it's going to, you know, give up more of a scouting report. But yeah, he a power forward. He's someone who can play both center and wing. Now, he hasn't played center regularly in a while. He in the last two seasons, at least in Sweden, he was exclusively left wing. But yeah, Scott Young, I mean, back then, so they seem as someone who could play kind of up and down the lineup. And they thought he was going to get stronger, bigger at the time. And he did a little bit. Back then he was 6 foot 190. Now he's 6'1", 196. But yeah, he's a big guy. Scott Young did say he thought his game would translate better over here, because he does kind of play a physical style, which it's hard to do in Europe. But yeah, I mean, the big thing is he hasn't played in North America yet. He was supposed to last year for Toronto, but because of COVID, he couldn't so the Swedish league started on time. At the time, you know, teams were loaning their European prospects over to, you know, to your teams in their country, and then they were going to bring them over when the AHL season started. So that's what the Leafs said they were going to do with Hollander. They were going to bring him over for the NHL camp and then put him in the AHL, but NHL camps were in December, and then by then we learned that the AHL season wasn't starting until February. So with a lot of guys like him, like what the Penguins did with Bjorkqvist, it really didn't make sense to bring them over for camp and then kind of interrupt their season and then not even have the AHL start until February. So they left him in Sweden for the full year. So, I mean, he's 21 years old. He's still young, but yeah, adjusting to the North American game will be part of it. So I think, I mean, it would benefit him best to start in the AHL, probably not fight for an NHL spot right away, but yeah, really kind of interesting player not for a team that doesn't have a whole lot of forward prospects, at least, you know, ones that could conceivably push for a spot in the near future.
All right, as the garbage truck comes back on the other side of the road, we'll take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to get all into the Penguins protected list. Maybe look at some of the other Carey Price is available. My goodness. When we come back, and then we'll also, our player spotlight this week will be Jeff Carter. He's going to be mentioned because we know he's going to be here when we return to the 66 to 87 podcast. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast. As a reminder, we will have Scott Young on in the next segment. But right now, want to discuss the talking point of the weekend. Well, the twin talking points. We went through the Jared McCann trade, but right now, Brandon Tanev is out there for anyone. If the Seattle Kraken want him, he is available. So is Zach Aston-Reese. So are a few others. But here, the Penguins had to make a call. I mean, they had to make some tough calls. Here's who they ended up protecting. Teddy Bluger, Jeff Carter, Sidney Crosby, Jake Guentzel, Kasperi Kapanen, Evgeny Malkin, Brian Rust, Brian Dumoulin, Chris Letang, Mike Matheson, Tristan Jarry. Am I missing anyone on that list? No, I think we got everybody. I think the one that may have stood out there would be the decision to protect Jeff Carter at the expense of maybe one of their grind line players, Czar or Tanev. We'll start with you, Taylor. Your thoughts, were you surprised that they went this direction with Carter and exposing Tanev and Czar?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm not really surprised by Aston-Reese. I don't think I ever had him on one of my protected lists that I would do, especially, I mean, when they had Tanev and back when they had, you know, McCann. But Carter was a guy that, you know, was kind of borderline. You could make a case for either way. His age isn't necessarily a total deterrent for what if Seattle would have taken him if he would have been left exposed. I mean, we've talked about it before how, I mean, if they are going to be a contender, I mean, he's a good player. But if they're not, he's still a good asset, and you could trade him for, you know, picks prospects at the deadline, which is kind of, you know, what they need as they're building up their system. And, you know, just, I mean, he's a leader, he's a veteran. He could have been good for establishing that kind of culture in the franchise's first year or so. So, it's not a given that if they would have left him unprotected, he would have been safe. I know people keep saying if he would have been picked by Seattle, he would have retired. That's not something he ever said. That's something people are running with now. That's not based in any fact. I mean, I think there are reasons why Seattle would be appealing to him. I mean, it is closer to where his family lives. His family lives in LA, but, so again, there are reasons why it would have been risky to take him. I mean, to leave him exposed. So I see that, but I just don't see it making sense doing so at the expense of now McCann and maybe Tanev, or maybe Aston-Reese, but I mean, you know, someone like that. I just it doesn't seem like a whole lot of, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So,
Dave, one of the things that has been thrown out there in, on the Twitter sphere is that the Penguins fell for a bluff, that Seattle wasn't interested in. I'm not saying that this is true or not. I'm just saying that this has been posed, that the Seattle was playing a little poker here. They weren't interested in Carter, but they were feigning interest in Carter. What do you see? Again, we know that Ron Hextall has not spoken, but if you can try to get it into the mind of the organization, why do you think they ended up going the way they did with Carter?
Well, if it's on Twitter, I think we can assume that it's accurate. it certainly was striking, I thought, that Carter could have very publicly made the case, whether he sincerely felt this way or not, that if the Kraken picked him, that he would retire.
Right.
I thought it was pretty striking that he didn't seem to do anything of the sort. You could say he forced the Penguins' hand to protect him. Had it been my call to make, I still would have exposed him, on the thinking that, he would be less of a loss, to the franchise than somebody like Tanev, would be. But, it's certainly possible that, Francis would have expressed interest in Carter to try to get a reaction from the Penguins. He certainly seems to be playing some mind games with Montreal right now over Carey Price. So, Francis is a very intelligent guy who's going to play all the angles. He's, it's why he's going to be a very effective GM in Seattle. So, I would not, put it past him to have, tried to shape Ron Hextall's thinking as far as his protected list goes. But I also don't have any evidence to indicate that actually was the case.
To pick up on your point, Dave, I think that Jeff Carter, either through his agent or, as you said, through him, would have let it be known that he was not interested in going to Seattle, right? I mean, one of the things that Ron Francis has to do as he's going through here, and certainly with the Carey Price situation that you alluded to, is just trying to gauge, especially in a case like Carter, where he's got 1 year left on his contract, at his age, would he want to come there? Would he maybe want to be the captain? Would he want to be a part of an expansion franchise for a year? I have to think that I agree with you. I have to think that the Carter was okay with that. And that's the reason that the Penguins had to make the move that they made. I'm going to go by Joe Thomas, the future Pro Football Hall of Fame left tackle. We were once talking to him and we were asking him speculative questions, and his answer was, "Well, I have eyes too." And when I watched Jeff Carter last year, he was their best player from the time that he came over until the time that the season ended. That's my humble opinion. I thought he was their best player. That may be more of an indictment on what happened in the playoffs with some other guys. But I think he's got some time left. I think he can play next year. Would I have made the move? I don't know if I would have done that, but I understand why they felt they had to. Again, because he played so well, and if by chance they somehow fall out of it next year down the stretch, he is somebody who could maybe get you a third-round draft pick or, who knows, higher if that's the case. So I do see the logic in this. To a point, Taylor, now, if you're Ron Francis, now you look at what you have to pick from. Who do you take from this roster? Because now we know, as Dave's been saying for weeks, we didn't know. We didn't know who else is out there. Now we know. Now we know what other type of players are out there. Who do you think is more appealing to Ron Francis?
I mean, I do think, so like I did a mock draft and I had them taking Tanev. And I mean, a big part of that was just their cap hits. Tanev is $2 million cheaper. And at least when I was building my mock and you look at some of the players who are out there and what they make, it's not maybe as easy to stay under the salary cap as I think maybe someone thought. So, you know, maybe in that way, Zucker's, you know, $5.5 million cap hit would be a deterrent. And then, I mean, you're not just taking the, you know, the best forwards out there. You're, you know, building a team too. And you do need solid bottom six guys if they want to be, you know, competitive. And Tanev can be that for them. It can be energy. And, he, you know, we've seen Sullivan do it before. When they do need a spark, he is someone that you can, you know, bump up to the top six mid-game. So just, you know, taking all that in consideration, you know, that kind of role he can play, I would still have Seattle taking him. Aston Reese, you could make a case too, because he is, you know, on the cheaper side. I mean, he's going to be, he'd have to be re-signed. But, you know, Seattle, if you look at like the staff they have, they are very big on analytics. They do have a pretty significant analytics department. And Aston Reese, that we've talked about before, is a guy who really does have very strong defensive analytics, at least the ones that are available to us, or, you know, some of the independent ones. Now, teams do have their own proprietary numbers, so we don't know what they're working with. But he's someone that if they are really taking analytics into consideration, just what he does defensively, and you can see that too, because it's the thing he does on the ice that lead to those good analytic numbers. But I wouldn't rule out really Aston Reese either.
Okay, Pierre. So you can see with your eyes as well. All right, Dave. All right, we've heard what Taylor's thinking, what they might do. What do you think they might do?
Well, I mean, as always, you have to put this in the context of, you know, the other moves that they are planning. You know, and so, you know, my guess at this point is that Tanev is the guy that they will take, but, you know, who they pick from the Penguins will be influenced by who they decide to take from other teams. Right. You know, and vice versa. If they if they pick Tanev, it might you know, knock a guy that they'd be considering from Winnipeg, you know, down their list. But Tanev is the kind of guy. You know, hockey isn't new to the Seattle market. But Tanev is the kind of guy who could develop a following out there pretty quickly. I think he could sell some tickets with his style, if not necessarily his prolific offensive output. You know, my guess at this point is that's the way they would go. But, you know, as Taylor mentioned, I think you could make a good case for Aston Reese as an under the radar choice. You know, he's a good solid player who presumably will come in at a pretty reasonable figure on his next contract, whether it's with the Penguins or the Kraken or whoever.
Okay. This is with lightning answers here. Quick answers. Taylor, who has the better upside, Aston Reese or Brandon Tanev?
I would say Aston Reese because he's younger, and we kind of did see him take that offensive step last year after he had his surgery.
Dave?
Aston Reese because, you know, I think Tanev has a relatively short shelf life left just because he plays so much bigger than he is. There's a lot of wear and tear on that body, and I think that will catch up with him, you know, over the next few seasons.
I mean, I love Tanev. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I'm not a Penguin fan. I'm just a complete neutral. I wonder this though, and you guys can tell me you're wrong. You often do. I wonder with Tanev and the situation in Pittsburgh, because the Penguins have so few guys that play this way, does his play stand out more because he's a Penguin? If you put Brandon Tanev, Mike, I guess what I'm saying is if you put Brandon Tanev on the Islanders or Vegas or the Bruins, would he stand out as much as he stands out with the Penguins, Taylor?
Yeah, you made a good point. I mean, someone like the Islanders who, you know, they really do have a strong they don't have guys that play like Tanev, you know, necessarily, but just really a strong bottom six and, you know, physical players. I don't know if he would be maybe as big of a deal in somewhere like there. I guess you could make that case too. And there are a lot of, you know, heavy hitting, you know, bottom six kind of wingers available in the draft. So in that case, maybe he wouldn't, you know, Seattle wouldn't need him as much. You know, they could get someone who could be an ineffective bottom six player elsewhere. But I still just think the energy he brings is something that's kind of unique, not totally unique, but, you know, something Tanev has that not many other guys do.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you agree with that, but I do think there are other guys out there, and I'm wondering, Dave, is if you think that you can find other guys out there like a Tanev, and we know there's some, when they're not many, but there are some. If Ron Francis would look at a kid like Aston Reese, and you, to your point, you brought this up several times, maybe stick him on the power play. Maybe when you go to a team like that that doesn't have a Crosby or a Malkin or guys that are absolutely have to be on that power play, maybe that's where a place where he could go and his offensive game could blossom, because there should be plenty of room to grow.
Yeah. I mean, it's conceivable that he could thrive in a greater offensive role. I don't think it's a given that he would,
right?
But, you know, I think there's enough in his history to suggest that it wouldn't be inappropriate to at least give him the opportunity to do that, especially as a net front guy on the power play. And I mean, I think that if he happens to stay in Pittsburgh, that's something that would merit a look from the Penguins. There's been no indication that it will happen, but I still think it's something that would be worth a try.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. I tend to agree with you that it may be Tanev, but I would not be surprised if it was Aston Reese, just because we said that maybe there's a little bit more of an offensive upside there. But we'll find out Wednesday, right? We'll have something more to talk about on the podcast on Thursday. We'll know for sure who's staying and who's going in that regard. But when
Wednesday, 8 p.m., it's on ESPN2 if you're in the States, sports, not if you're in Canada.
Unbelievable.
I don't even know what ESPN2 is, but I don't know what channel that is. So now we have a couple days to figure that out.
Yeah, well, there you go. It just hands off Freddie Gaudreau. All right, when we come back, we will be joined by Scott Young with the Penguins. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the 66 to 87 podcast. And as promised, we are now joined by the Penguins Director of Player Development, Scott Young. Scott, thanks for taking some time today. I know it's getting to be a busy time of year for you, everybody with the team.
Yeah, no problem. Looking forward to what happens here in the next couple of weeks.
I know something, you know, the fans want to hear about is Philip Hollander back in the organization. If you could just talk about what kind of player he is for listeners who may have forgotten in the last year, and then just how do you think his game will translate to North America if that is the plan for him next year to move over?
Oh, sorry. You know what? It's great to have him back. He's a big, strong winger that is strong in the corners, protects the puck really well, and likes to get to the front of the net. And I remember before we traded him, you know, we were showing him some clips of Patrick Hornquist and how to position himself in front of the net and create some havoc like Hornquist used to do. So that's the type of player we envision him. And, you know, I think he's added a step and to his feet and his speed. So we're excited to have him back.
Another guy that's drawn Hornquist comparisons before, Casper Bjorkqvist. Just what was this last year like for him playing, you know, most of the year in Finland? And were you able to see many improvements in his game in that short sample size when he came back to Wilkes-Barre at the end? I know when he was hurt, you know, the previous season, he talked a lot about how he used that as an opportunity to really improve on his hands. So just what was this last year like for him, and what was he able to really improve on?
Well, I think it was good for him to play over it in Kuku and, you know, in his home country. A little more space there, but it's a skilled league, and I think he had a good year there. He put up some decent numbers there, and then when he got back over to Wilkes here, I think it was important for him to get back over to readjust, because not that he's played over in Finland a lot because he was at Providence College, but it is a different game. And, you know, he got back to his North American habits pretty quickly. But the first few games in Wilkes, you could tell it was an adjustment coming from the big sheet over there in Europe. And once he got going and started to feel, you know, much more adjusted, and never mind all the COVID quarantines he had to go through. I think he had to go through like six different ones, which is kind of crazy. But he ended up playing a good, hard, physical game. And that's something we definitely want to see from him. And I think the skill work that he worked on over in Finland really did help him.
Yeah. Valtteri Puustinen, another Finnish forward prospect, he signed his entry-level deal to start next season. Just what kind of player is he? What can you tell our listeners about him? And what kind of growth have you really seen from him since he was drafted? Because, you know, he's kind of a name you hear a lot more now. What are you hoping to see from him as he makes that adjustment to North America too?
Well, we're hoping he brings some offense, because he can certainly shoot the puck. He can score. He's got good speed. He's a little bit of a smaller guy, but he can really move. He's got good feet. He's got excellent offensive instincts, offensive hockey sense, and he can make plays. He can find the soft areas of the ice to get open, to get his shot off. And he really did put up some good numbers this year, and that was great to see. So we're looking forward to getting him over and getting him adjusted again from that big sheet over to the North American style.
And then Nicholas Salmari, what's the plan for him next season? Is the plan to bring him back to North America, or just what's next?
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back in Wilkes. And, you know, it was just really that he would have been here last year if it was a normal year. Mm-hmm. But it was just strictly COVID. We had to get these guys playing. We wanted to make sure they were playing as much as they could. And with all the questions over here, we decided to keep him over there, and he will be back.
When he does come back, what you know aspect of his game do you think he needs to really work on to take that next step and you know, maybe fight for an NHL spot, you know, at some point?
Well, he's got the tools. He's a good skater. He sees the ice very well. He moves the puck well. We want to see him be a little bit more assertive, play with more confidence, and start to jump up into the play a little bit more, trust his instincts, trust himself, and have confidence in himself with the puck, because he does have all the tools. So we want to make sure, you know, there's at times that he can maybe play a little bit conservative, and he certainly has the tools to be able to jump up and add a little bit of offense. And but he's got a great stick defensively, and he's a good size, and he defends really well stick on puck. So We like a lot about Nicholas.
Scotty, on Hollander, how do you see his game translating to the smaller sheet in North America? And how far away from contending for a spot in the NHL do you see him being at this stage?
Well, after the trade, I didn't see him a lot after the trade, but I think it's going to be better for him to play on the smaller rink with his type of play and his size and his strength. It's going to be a smaller area for him to be able to get to the corner from the front of the net and from the corners to the net. And I just think it's going to benefit him to play that more physical grinding style in a smaller rink. So we'll have to see how he progresses. But I would hope that he comes over. He's probably going to need to spend a little bit of time in Wilkes-Barre, And I'm hoping, you know, maybe it's a, you know, halfway through the season that he's pushing and pushing for a spot.
And Sam, your top two picks from a couple of years ago, Samuel Poulin, how much, if at all, was his development affected by the, you know, the strange pandemic season in junior hockey? And is he at a stage where he could realistically hope to compete for a spot in the NHL in the coming season?
I think he should come in definitely expecting to compete for a spot at training camp. No question about it. You know, again, he went through what everybody went through with all this quarantining and all these different things, these different challenges that all the prospects had to go through. But he was playing hockey. And, you know, they went to the finals and came up short with Valdor. But he ended up playing a good amount of hockey compared to some other players. I mean, some players didn't play at all. You know, if you look at the Ontario Hockey League, they didn't play at all. So, you know, I don't think it affected his development in a negative way, especially under all the circumstances. And he should come in, he should come in expecting and looking and pushing to make our team. And, you know, if he needs a little bit more development, he's not far off. We have high expectations. Obviously, he's a first round pick, but it's not just because he's a first round pick. It's because we see how he's come along and his abilities, and he's an extremely driven young man, and he's going to do everything he can to make our team.
Ed, fellow, you chose a couple rounds after you got Poulin, Nathan Legere. How far away is he, and what aspects of his game have to be upgraded for him to be a serious contender for a job in the NHL?
So what happened with Nathan this year is we talked to him about becoming quicker, becoming faster, his first three strides. He's got a great shot. He's really strong. He competes hard. He's an extremely driven player. He finishes checks. He gets in hard on the forecheck. Needed to get a little quicker, and he's lost. The last time I talked to him, I think he said he was down 12 pounds. And so he's changed his eating habits. He's changed his diet, and he's seen immediate results. So, you know, when a player gets to that realization that they have to change their habits and they can see the results right away, we noticed that he looks a lot faster on the ice. So he might even try to lose a couple more pounds because he knows how fast the NHL is. And I think that's going to be a big part of him having a chance to make our team, because he's a guy, too, that is not far off.
Scott, this is the 30th anniversary of the 91 Cup. Do you guys still stay in touch? Do the players from that team? I don't know if there's a text chain that goes out on the day that you guys win it, or do you guys obviously you still see Kevin Stevens, obviously you work closely with him, and Mario, but is there much camaraderie still with that group?
You know what? It's hard because we've all gone so many different directions, but I think it's great when the organization, you know, organizes something for the group to commemorate the 91 Cup win, because that does bring us all together. And when we do get together, or we run into somebody, if I run into Brian Trottier in a rink somewhere, it's really just like, and I know it's kind of the cliche with hockey, but you can not see somebody that you've won with for, you know, 15 years and you see them and it's just like you've never been apart. So that's that kind of relationship we have with, you know, with all the guys on that team in 91. And, you know, whatever can happen with if the organization decides to put something together, it would be great to see everybody.
All right. Well, again, we know you're busy. Your time's valuable, and best of luck going forward. And thanks to Scott Young for joining us today. That'll be it on a very jam-packed 66 to 87 podcast. For Scott Young, Taylor Haas, and Dave Molinari, this is Tom Reed. We'll talk to you later in the week.